ओम अग्निमिनंदस्याजनजनाश्लोकया सक्षुस्मिलितांजेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टां स्थपितां जिनभूतले स्वयं रूपकदामायं ददति च पदंशिखां वंशकौपदूपश्च कृपसिन्धुभैश्च प्रतीतरं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Hiranyakashipu has preached philosophy to his relatives to pacify them. He's performed great austerities to gain power, and finally Lord Brahma has descended. And has fulfilled the desires of Hiranyakashipu. He performed such great austerities. Brahma was pleased, asked him, "What do you wish from me? You've done this to please me. What do you want?" Because in this world, everyone acts wanting something. We want something, and that motivates us to act. So Brahma asked Hiranyakashipu, "What is motivating you? What do you want?" Hiranyakashipu offered praise to Lord Brahma, respecting him and speaking as if he were God, practically speaking, as if he were the Supreme Lord, because he's such a powerful controller. And then Hiranyakashipu then revealed his desires. Really, he wanted to become immortal. Because if one is immortal, then one can do what one wants. Using one's power, one can accumulate power, and no one ultimately can harm him. So Hiranyakashipu wanted to become immortal, but because he was unable to be immortal, as every living entity, every living being, embodied soul in this world must die. He must leave his body behind. Therefore, using his intelligence as if he was a type of a scientist or something, because that's what scientists often try to do, is to use their intelligence to baffle death, to change the law of nature. So he tried to outwit the law of nature by requesting benedictions one by one that he thought would leave him free from death. He requested not to be killed inside or outside, because if one's not going to die inside, where will he die? Only outside. If one's going to die neither inside nor outside, then he won't die. One has to die either the daytime or the nighttime. So this is how Hiranyakashipu was thinking. Grant me that I won't be dying day or night. Man nor beast shall kill me. Either living nor dead. Neither living nor dead can kill me. So if something is alive, fight and kill, or a big boulder can fall on a head who has no life, maybe. But if neither something living nor dead can harm us, then what do we fear? So Hiranyakashipu, in this way, one by one, attained benedictions from Lord Brahma. In this way, he thought himself immortal. Text 1. Lord Brahma was very much satisfied by Hiranyakashipu's austerities, which were difficult to perform. Therefore, when solicited for benedictions, he indeed granted them, although they were rarely to be achieved. Lord Brahma said, "O Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions for which you have asked are difficult to obtain for most men. Nonetheless, O my son, I shall grant you them, although they are generally not available." Here's Prabhupada's purport. this is Brahma's acquiescence to the desires of Hiranyakashipu. I will give you these things. They are dulab. They are very rare. They are difficult to get. Generally, people can't get them. Prabhupada's purport is very interesting. Material benedictions are not always exactly worthy of being called benedictions. We want. We wish that someone would give us what we want. But once we have that thing that we wish to be benedicted with, there's a burden that comes along with it. And therefore, one gets something and then wishes he doesn't have that same thing. If one possesses more and more, Prabhupada says, a benediction itself may become a curse. For just as achieving material opulence in this material world requires great strength and endeavor, maintaining it also requires great endeavor. And what also happens when one has great wealth or some opulence, one's worked so hard, and by the grace of God one attains some wealth or opulence or position, then everyone becomes envious. Everyone wants it. Wants to knock you down. Him take over. Trying to harm you. And then you have to fight off everyone. So hard to maintain it. The nature of the world is a downward pull. So difficult. So it requires not only to achieve wealth and power, acquire strength, but to maintain it, practically speaking, requires even more. Prabhupada continues, Lord Brahma informed Hiranyakashipu that although he was ready to offer him whatever he had asked, the result of the benedictions would be very difficult for Hiranyakashipu to maintain. Nonetheless, since Brahma had promised, he wanted to grant all the benedictions asked. The word dhulabhan indicates that one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. There's a story that Prabhupada once told of one in the early part of the 20th century. There was a very, very wealthy, wealthy Bengali gentleman. I can't remember his name. It was either Asutosh Mukherjee or C.R. Das. You've heard of those names? Which one was the barrister? Well, it wasn't him, it was the other one, C.R. Das. He was so wealthy, so very, very wealthy. And one day he was sitting somewhere with his wife, and he looked very, very sad. He was sitting outside somewhere. Prabhupada told the story. And then she asked him, what's wrong? What do you want? Because after all, the general perspective is if one has so much wealth, there's no question of want, because one has wealth, one can get whatever one wants. But he was very sad. So she asked him, what do you want? And he pointed, I want to be like him. And he pointed to some beggar who was walking by with nothing, begging from everyone. So much work, so much endeavor, and one gets caught in a pattern of defending and fighting off and gaining, and one gets weaker as one ages. And still, one wants and wants, and people want what you have. So difficult, so difficult. Therefore, the happy, peaceful person is only the actual devotee of Krishna. Krishna bhakti nishkam, because he has no desires. Atta eva, therefore, shanta. He is peaceful. Bhakti mukti siddhi kami shakali ashanta. Soon as we have material desires in our heart, immediately fear enters. Bhayam dvitiya binavesha tasyad. Because as soon as you want, then there's something you don't want. And you're in the world of material duality. Bhayam, and then fear comes. Bhayam dvitiya abhinavesha tasyad. Ishad apatasya vaparyato smriti. And one gets just the opposite. This is the very nature of the material world. So Lord Brahma granted benedictions to Hiranyakashipu, but these benedictions were actually not benedictions. Even though they are the benedictions valued by every materialistic person, power, still they don't bring what the heart is truly longing for, what the person truly needs, what the soul longs for. So Prabhupada ends his purport with a word of advice. The word dholabham indicates that one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. Then Lord Brahma, who awards infallible benedictions, that means they cannot fail, that means what he says will come true. So he awarded, he departed from Hiranyakashipu, being worshipped by the best of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, and then being praised by great sages and saintly persons. So Brahma left. The demon Hiranyakashipu, having thus been blessed by Lord Brahma, and having acquired a lustrous golden body, continued to remember the death of his brother, and therefore be envious of Lord Vishnu. Despite his wonderful preaching, despite of his power, determination to perform such great austerities, despite achieving everything that he wanted, he still was envious. That means he still remained unsatisfied. There's always at least one more thing we want. One thing, and this time he wanted revenge for Vishnu's killing, having killed Varahadev's, having killed his brother Hiranyaksha. There's always one more thing. Only if then I'll be happy. We can make a list of all the things we need and all the things we want and all the things that we wish to stop from happening to us, and all the people that we'd like to fall on their heads and get out of our way. But even if everything gets fulfilled, if we don't love Krishna, we will not be happy. Because envy remains in the heart. When there's envy, there cannot be happiness. Hiranyakashipu became the conqueror of the entire universe. With his powers, he conquered the universe. Indeed, that great demon conquered all the planets in the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower, including the planets of the human beings, the Gandharvas, the Garudas, the great serpents, the Siddhas, Charanas, and Vidyadharas, the great saints, Yamaraj, the Manus, the Yakshas, the Rakshasas, and Pishachas, and their masters, and the masters of the ghosts and Bhutas. He defeated the rulers of all the other planets where there are living entities. Everywhere he was successful. And he brought them under his control. Conquering the abodes of all, he seized their power and influence. Prabhupada's purport. The word Garuda in this verse indicates there are planets of great birds, like Garuda. Similarly, the word Urag indicates that there are planets of enormous serpents. Such a description of the various planets of the universe may challenge modern scientists who think that all planets but this earth are vacant. These scientists claim to have launched excursions to the moon, where they have found no living entities, but only big craters full of dust and stone. Although in fact, the moon is so brilliant that it acts like the sun in illuminating the entire universe. Of course, it is not possible to convince modern scientists of the Vedic information about the universe. Nonetheless, we are not very much impressed by the words of the scientists who say that all other planets are vacant and that only the Earth is full of living entities. Prabhupada was very, very, very bold in stating they have not gone to the moon. One time, many, many years ago, in the either in the late 70s or the early 80s, when I was teaching in the Gurukula, we took all our students on a class trip to Washington, D.C., to the Aeronautical Museum. And in that museum, they had the rocks that were brought back from the moon. A few years before that, Prabhupada had set Suprabhupada write an article showing how they didn't go to the moon. But there we were, standing in front of these rocks. And as soon as we saw them, we all had a great realization. These rocks look just like the gravel in our driveway. one could have mixed them up and no one could have told the difference. So that made us skeptical, for one thing. And also, it made us wonder what the great value was of what is it, the $20 million moon journey, or whatever it was, billion dollars, and come back with some rocks that look like the rocks in the driveway, the gravel. But in any case, Prabhupada was very bold in this. So bold. Shockingly bold. Challengingly bold. Saying, not impressed with a scientist's assumption that the Earth is the only planet in the universe that is populated, every other planet is empty. Quite unlikely. But in any case, Hiranyakashipu gathered the power, controlled, and gathered the power throughout the universe. He was so empowered himself by Lord Brahma. He gathered the power of the universe. Hiranyakashipu, who possessed all opulences, began residing in heaven, Swarga, with its famous Nandana gardens, which is enjoyed by the demigods. In fact, he resided in the most opulent palace of Indra, the king of heaven. The palace had been directly constructed by the demigod architect Vishwakarma and was as beautifully made as if the goddess of fortune of the entire universe resided there. So immediately, what did he do when he conquered? He began living in heaven in the opulences, the opulent palaces of Indra. He took over that which belonged to someone else and he began living there. What does that mean? Means envy. This is the way everyone thinks. We see someone in a car that we don't have, in a building that we don't have, a house that we don't have, with something we don't have, and we imagine, fantasize, an illusion that if I had that, and if I was in that position, then my heart would be peaceful and I would be happy. That's called illusion. So he took over with that type of envy and mentality. He took over the heavenly kingdom, lived in the palaces of Indra, enjoyed as if he was the king of heaven. Prabhupada's purport. From this description, it appears that all the heavenly planets of the upper planetary system are thousands upon thousands of times more opulent than the lower planetary systems in which we live. Vishwakarma, the famous heavenly architect, is known as the constructor of many wonderful buildings in the upper planets, where there are not only beautiful buildings, but also many opulent gardens and parks, which are described as Nandana Devo Dhyan, gardens quite fit to be enjoyed by the demigods. The description of the upper planetary system and its opulences is to be understood from authoritative scriptures like the Vedic literatures. Telescopes and other imperfect instruments of scientists are inadequate for evaluating the upper planetary system. Although such instruments are needed because the vision of the so-called scientists is imperfect, the instruments themselves are also imperfect. Therefore, the upper planets cannot be appraised by imperfect men using imperfect man-made instruments. Direct information received from the Vedic literature, however, is perfect. We therefore cannot accept the statement that there are no opulent residences on planets other than this earth. Actually, the atmosphere on upper planets is subtle. It's of a different quality. And therefore, the enjoyment that one is capable of there is of a completely different level. So in trying to view everything through our own mind, what do we end up seeing? We end up seeing our own mind only. If we have subtle consciousness, we see everything differently. Reality changes, it shifts. In fact, we see this every day. We personally have experience of this every day. When our mood is one way, the world looks one way. When our mood is differently, if we're angry, everyone is bad. When we're happy, everyone is good. Everyone is nice, likable, sweet. So the mind will dictate, Atmavan manyate jagat. It dictates how we see the world. So because we have gross minds, we cannot see beyond very, very gross things. So Prabhupada again is stressing what the Vedic description is. Very, very different from that which the scientists see with their gross minds and gross instruments. 9 through 12. This now the description of Indra's palace where Hiranyakashipu was living. The steps of King Indra's residence were made of coral. The floor was bedecked with invaluable emeralds. What color are emeralds? What color is coral? There's different colors, but there's white and red, yes. But very, very, very wonderful. Each material has its own vibration. It gives out it affects the atmosphere. So when these very, very valuable, auspicious materials are used, the atmosphere is changed. Just like if a house or a room is very, very dirty, or if one happens to walk into a pub, a bar, it's dirty and the light, there's an atmosphere in there. Or if one, on the other hand, walks into the forest, there's another atmosphere. Or into a temple, there's a completely different atmosphere. Or if one walks into those video game parlors with the sounds and the everyone feeding the money in there, the atmosphere is completely different from the temple. What goes on there creates the atmosphere, and the materials, the cleanliness, all these things affect. Even if one sits in front of a computer for a long time, one doesn't notice it, but it affects one's consciousness. Then when one turns the computer off, immediately there is such a relaxation. Yes? Immediately. You didn't know you were in complete anxiety, but when you turn the darn thing off, then you realize something has been lifted. When one acts sinfully, it creates a canopy of misery, of heaviness, of illusion upon one's head, around one's consciousness. One whose consciousness is pure in the mode of goodness is crystal clear. His consciousness is crystal clear. His mind is unflickering like a candle's flame in a windless place. We can't even imagine, practically speaking, what that's like. What to speak of having eyes that are covered with love for Krishna. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena. How we would see the world if our consciousness wasn't so contaminated. Vittaragavaya krodha manmaya marupashayata bhavo jnana tapasa puta mad bhavamagata. Free from attachment, fear and anger, Krishna says. Many, many persons in the past have taken shelter of me and have attained me. Us victims of Kali Yuga, it's very difficult to imagine this. But if one chants Hare Krishna, then the external atmosphere changes, the internal consciousness changes. Very, very, very sweet. So here, the atmosphere that Hiranyakashipu had put himself in was Indra's atmosphere, swaga, heavenly atmosphere, very, very subtle. Not transcendental, but subtle, subtle material. And therefore, the enjoyment is more subtle there. So the King Indra's residence, the steps were made of coral, the floor was bedecked with invaluable emeralds. The walls were crystals, and the columns, Vaidurja stone. The wonderful canopies were beautifully decorated. The seats were decorated with rubies. And the silk bedding, as white as foam, was decorated with pearls. The ladies of the palace, who were blessed with beautiful teeth and the most wonderfully beautiful faces, walked here and there in the palace, their ankle bells tinkling melodiously. And they saw their own beautiful reflections in the gems. The demigods, however, being very much oppressed, why were they oppressed by Hiranyakashipu, had to bow down and offer obeisances at the feet of Hiranyakashipu. So even in the midst of so much opulence, they were mentally oppressed because of Hiranyakashipu. They were miserable, and that made him very happy. That was the nature of Hiranyakashipu. The demigods, being very oppressed, had to bow down and offer obeisances at the feet of Hiranyakashipu, who chastised the demigods very severely and for no reason. Thus Hiranyakashipu lived in the palace and severely ruled everyone. Purported by Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful in the heavenly planets that all the demigods, except Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, were forced to engage in his service. This is shakti, or power. Indeed, they were afraid of being severely punished if they disobeyed him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has compared Hiranyakashipu to Maharaj Vena, who was also atheistic and scornful of the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas. Yet Maharaj Vena was afraid of some of the great sages, such as Bhrigu, whereas Hiranyakashipu ruled in such a way that everyone feared him but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. So he was so powerful that he brought so many people under control. Hiranyakashipu was so alert against being burnt to ashes by the anger of great sages like Bhrigu that by dint of austerity he surpassed their power and placed even them under his subordination. It appeared that even in the higher planetary systems to which people are promoted by pious activities, disturbances are created by asuras like Hiranyakashipu. No one in the three worlds can live in peace and prosperity without disturbance. Abrahma bhuvanaloka puna arbitrarita. This is the very nature of the material world. if we wish to change the nature of the material world and be the first person who achieved perfect happiness here, good luck. But the very nature of the material world, we want benedictions. The parieto smriti, the opposite happens than what we want. We fear we get something. We fear losing it. We see someone who has something that we don't have and we want it. Envy enters our heart. Pride enters our heart. We're whipped by these things. How can we be happy? And then ultimately everything is temporary. We die, we get old, we get sick. The people we love, because you can't enjoy yourself alone, you have to enjoy with people, with friends, with beloveds, they get sick, they die, anxiety. It's cold, it's hot. People become envious, attacked, stolen from. So just by the very nature of the material world, if we have material consciousness, there's no happiness. There's dreams of happiness. And the happiness for a materialist is having other people envious of him. So they think, oh, look what he has, he's happy. So they dress up their wives in fancy clothes, revealing clothes. They drive in big cars, so that everyone thinks, oh, they must be so happy. But it's a fake, a bluff. But if one actually wants to be happy, there's a Vaishnava way to do it. Vishva Purna Sukhayate, Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur said, for one who is a devotee, means he's in contact with Krishna consciously, willingly, surrenderedly, and lovingly, then the whole nature of the material world changes. When one stops viewing and trying to control the material world for his pleasure, for his pleasure, as if he's the center, and thereby conflicting with every other illusion person who's dreaming, wishing they were the center, when one stops that and shifts one's consciousness to surrender to Krishna, manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru, when one takes shelter of Krishna, sarvadamam pratyajam mamekam charanam vraja mokshyashami masucha, when one is fully faithful and connected to Krishna, taking shelter of him full-heartedly, then the very nature of the material world changes. And then, for him, he's happy wherever he is. Happiness and distress on the material level, meaningless. He's happy on such a deeper level. Deep, like the ocean, is peaceful. Krishna bhakti nishkamate vishanta. So Aranyakashipu had everything. He subjugated the demigods. Before, the demigods were happy, but now they're miserable because they're under the control of this wretched Aranyakashipu, and he would chastise them, he'd oppress them, force them to bow down. He was so powerful he was able to do this. Even the great sages who had killed Vena, Maharaj Vena, with their curse, he had controlled them and he had outpowered them, so to speak. And they could not do anything. They had to surrender to him. Oh, my dear king, Aranyakashipu was always drunk on strong-smelling wines and liquors, and therefore his coppery eyes were always rolling. Nonetheless, because he had powerfully executed great austerities in mystic yoga, although he was abominable, all but the three principal demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, personally worshipped him to please him by bringing him various presentations with their own hands. Text 14. Omar Judhisthira. Narada Muni is explaining this. Omar Judhisthira, or descendant of Pandu. By dint of his personal power, Hiranyakashipu, being situated on the throne of King Indra, controlled the inhabitants of all the other planets. The two Gandharvas, Vishvavasu and Tumburu. I myself, Narada says, and the Vidyadharas, Apsaras and sages all offered prayers to him again and again just to glorify him. So how powerful this person was. Purport. The Asuras sometimes become so powerful that they can engage even Narada Muni and similar devotees in their service. This does not mean that Narada was subordinate to Hiranyakashipu. Sometimes, however, it so happens in this material world that great personalities, even great devotees, can also be controlled by the Asuras. Being worshipped by sacrifices offered with great gifts by those who strictly follow the principles of Varna and Ashrama, Hiranyakashipu, instead of offering shares of the oblations to the demigod, accepted them himself. As if in fear of Hiranyakashipu, the planet Earth, which consists of seven islands, delivered food grains without being plowed. Thus it resembled cows like the Sarabi of the spiritual world or the Kamaduk of heaven. The earth yielded sufficient food grains, the cows supplied abundant milk, and outer space was beautifully decorated with wonderful phenomena. By the flowing of their waves, the various oceans of the universe, along with their tributaries, the rivers, which are compared to their wives, supplied various kinds of gems and jewels for Hiranyakashipu's use. These oceans were the oceans of salt water, sugar cane juice, wine, clarified by the milk, yogurt, and sweet water. Text 18. The valleys between the mountains became fields of pleasure for Hiranyakashipu, by whose influence all the trees and plants produced fruits and flowers profusely in all seasons. The qualities of pouring water, drying and burning, which are all qualities of the three departmental heads of the universe, namely Indra, Vayu and Agni, were all directed by Hiranyakashipu alone without assistance from the demigods. So Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that he took charge of everything, controlled everything, and the universe was working perfectly, practically speaking. He was so powerful, he didn't require anyone's assistance. Yet, despite all of his power, text 19, in spite of achieving the power to control in all directions, and in spite of enjoying all types of dear sense gratification as much as possible, so he was the perfect materialist, full control over everything in every direction, full power of his senses, full sense gratification, profusion of the objects of senses, whatever he wanted, whatever he could imagine, in heaven, perfect situation. But still, Hiranyakashipu was dissatisfied because instead of controlling his senses, he remained their servant. Prabhupada's purport. This is an example of a suric life, of demonic life. This is the demonic attempt to become happy through control, through sense enjoyment, through power. Spiritual life is the opposite. We become happy through surrender and service. This is an example of a suric life. Atheists can advance materially and create an extremely comfortable situation for the senses. But because they are controlled by the senses, they cannot be satisfied. This is the effect of modern civilization. Materialists are very much advanced in enjoying money and women. Yet dissatisfaction prevails within human society because human society cannot be happy and peaceful without Krishna consciousness. As far as material sense gratification is concerned, materialists may go on increasing their enjoyment as far as they can imagine. But because people in such a material condition are servants of their senses, they cannot be satisfied. Haranyakashipu is a vivid example of this dissatisfied state of humanity. So he was the perfect materialist. Gold, Haranyakashipu, soft bed, enjoyment. Gold means wealth, and wealth means power. Power and enjoyment. That's what it means to be a successful materialist. But despite all that, the most successful materialist, Haranyakashipu, was dissatisfied because he conquered everything other than his senses. And when the senses are inflamed with desire, there is no happiness. There is a feverish mentality, a complete dissatisfaction, passion, ignorance, anger, envy, lust, anger, greed. No peace. And without peace, how can there be happiness? The Prabhupada again states, Haranyakashipu was a vivid example of this dissatisfied state of humanity. Text 20. Haranyakashipu thus passed a long time being very much proud of his opulences and transgressing the laws and regulations mentioned in the authoritative shastras. He was therefore subjected to a curse by the four Kumaras, who were great Brahmins. There have been many instances in which demons, after achieving material opulences, have become extremely proud, so much so that they have transgressed the laws of regulations given, the law and regulations given in the authoritative shastras. Haranyakashipu acted in this way. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Yashastra vidimut srija vartate kamakarata nasa siddhim abapnoti nasukam na param gatim. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. The word shastra refers to that which controls our activities. We cannot violate or transgress the laws and regulations and regulative principles mentioned in the shastras. Not that we can't. We can, but we can't and remain happy or become happy or become purified or attain the highest destination or be peaceful. We can act as whimsically as we want. We have freedom. But then we have to take responsibility for actions and take the consequences. Bhagavad Gita repeatedly confirms this, that we can't transgress shastra. Tasmat shastram pramanam te karya karya vyavastitau gyatva shastra vidanoktam karma kartum iharasi. One should understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may be gradually elevated. He may gradually be elevated. Bhagavad Gita 16:24. One should act according to the direction of the shastra, but the material energy is so powerful that as soon as one becomes materially opulent, he begins to transgress the shastric laws. As soon as one transgresses the laws of shastra, he immediately enters upon the path of destruction. More description about Haranyakashipu. Everyone, including the rulers of the various planets, was extremely distressed because of the severe punishment inflicted upon them by Hiranyakashipu. Fearful and disturbed, unable to find any other shelter, they at last surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So this is a wonderful thing. Distress and difficulty is wonderful if it pushes us to full-heartedly take shelter of Krishna. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukhitino arjana artha gigyasa artha ti jane chas paratasava. This is one of the ways that someone comes to Krishna. Usually we'll try every way possible before taking that way. We'll use all our own means to get free from the distress. But the demigods, they took full shelter of Krishna. At last, they surrendered unto him. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport here. In a condition of distress or misery, one wants to seek shelter of a well-wishing friend. The well-wishing friend of the perfect order is Lord Sri Krishna. Therefore, all the inhabitants of the various planets, being unable to find any other shelter, were obliged to seek shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Friend. If from the very beginning we seek shelter of the Supreme Friend, there will be no cause of danger. It is said that if a dog is swimming in the water and one wants to cross the ocean by catching hold of the dog's tail, certainly he is foolish. What an incredible example. Trying to cross the ocean by catching hold of the tail of a dog. Because you see the dogs when you throw, dogs don't generally like water. But if they're enthusiastic and they're with their master, and the master throws a stick in the water, the dog will go in and fetch it and bring it back to him. But there he is in the water, he'll grab the stick with his mouth, and he's with his paws, he's going like this in the water and swimming a little bit out with his dog paddling. And how far can he go out? 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet, swimming in the ocean. And I want to cross the ocean, so therefore I'm going to hold on to his tail, and with his swimming he'll pull me across. Even though I might not be able to cross the ocean myself, by holding on to the tail of the dog, I'll certainly get across. Certainly, as Prabhupada says, he is foolish. Similarly, if in distress one seeks shelter of a demigod, he's foolish, for his efforts will be fruitless. In all circumstances, one should seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then there will be no danger under any circumstances. This is a pure devotee. Gotripte varanam tata. Just like a cow takes shelter of, he's dependent upon his master, or she is dependent upon her master. Similarly, a devotee feels completely dependent on Krishna. And his mood is, there's a verse that Srila Rupa Goswami wrote that about the chatak bird, a bird who the only way this bird gets nourishment is by drinking the water as it falls from a rain cloud. Once the water touches the ground, the bird will not drink. And therefore it's always very hungry and very thirsty, because there's not very much. So the bird has to follow the rain clouds, hoping that some water is going to come down, and then the bird can drink and gain its nourishment. So Rupa Goswami compares himself to a chatak bird, because sometimes when this bird follows the cloud, wishing rain, sometimes instead of getting rain and nourishment, he gets the thunder and lightning. He wants nourishment, but he gets thunder and lightning. And sometimes he gets nourishment, he gets the water that he requires. The bird is dependent for his very existence, his life, on the cloud. So whether, but he doesn't know which he's going to get. He doesn't know. But it doesn't make any difference. He has to follow the cloud. He has no other way of gaining his sustenance. So Rupa Goswami compares himself to this chatak bird and asks the mercy of the Lord. But he says, I'm completely dependent. Whether you give me thunderbolt or the nourishment in the form of rain, I'm yours. So in that way, when the devotee fixes his consciousness upon Krishna with great devotional love, depending on him, and that dependence on Krishna's protection is the essence of surrender. One does one's duty in Krishna's service for Krishna's pleasure and then depends on Krishna for protection. Gotripte varanam tata. That's the essence of surrender. It's the main part of surrender. And imagine, were we fully surrendered to Krishna, who is very merciful and so powerful, what would we fear? We would have no anxiety. We would be happy on a different level than the happiness and miseries of the material world. So that's actually the natural condition of the soul, to be fully engrossed in Krishna, depending on him, seeking his protection, fully connected with him with great devotional love. Then Prabhupada says, if in distress one seeks the shelter of a demigod, he is foolish, for his efforts will be fruitless. Why? Because the demigod ultimately can't save a person. Because the demigod himself must die. Every powerful person must die. So it's foolish to hold on to the tails of such people. That's what Prabhupada is explaining. In all circumstances, therefore, one should seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then there will be no danger under any circumstances. Even if in every circumstance there's danger, there will be no danger. And we'll hear about this later. Very, very soon. In the next chapter, we'll start hearing about Prahlad Maharaj, who was in the most dangerous circumstance. Because his father, Hiranyakashipu, and very soon we're going to, in this chapter, in a few more verses, we'll start hearing about the glorious Prahlad. But although he was completely, superficially dependent on Hiranyakashipu, who was his father, he was only dependent on Krishna's protection. His relationship with Krishna was so deep, and his experience of Krishna was the reality of his life. And therefore, although in the most disturbing situation, the most dangerous situation, he was neither in anxiety nor danger. So that consciousness is wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. There will be no danger under any circumstance. Even dangerous circumstances, there will be no danger. And the final verses we'll read today, 22 and 23, and Prabhupada's short purport. So the demigod said, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto that direction where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated. were those purified souls in the renounced order of life, the great saintly persons go, and from which, having gone, they never return. Without sleep, fully controlling their minds, and living only on their breath, the predominating deities of the various planets began worshipping Rishikesh with this meditation. Prabhupada's purport. The two words, tasyai kashtaya, kashtayai, are very significant. Everywhere, in every direction, in every heart, and in every atom, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in his features, Brahman and Paramatma. Then what is the purpose of saying tasyai katasyai kastayai? The literal, the word-by-word translation of that is direction. Unto that direction. So if he's everywhere, if God is everywhere, why are they paying their obeisances and praying in a specific direction? Because he's there, he's everywhere as Brahman and Paramatma. What is the purpose of their saying tasyai kastayai, in that direction where Hari is situated? During Hiranyakashipu's time, his influence was everywhere, but he could not force his influence into the places where the Supreme Personality of Godhead had his pastimes. For example, on this earth there are such places as Vrindavan and Ayodhya, which are called dhammas. In the dham, there is no influence from Kali Yuga or any demon. If one takes shelter of such a dham, worship of the Lord becomes very easy, and resultant spiritual advancement quickly takes place. In fact, in India, one may still go to Vrindavan and similar places to achieve the results of spiritual activities quickly. Hiranyakashipu's influence was everywhere except where Lord Hari, Krishna's influence, was. So they took shelter of that place, that direction. And tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll hear about the Lord's reply to the prayers of the demigods. And we'll start hearing about the glories of Hiranyakashipu's exalted son, Prahlad Maharaj. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Lord Nrisimha Dev ki jai.